Western civilization, infant baptism, transgenderism, a legal case for the resurrection, the First Amendment, revisionist history. Your favorite guests will address these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Dallas Page, Fort Worth Nights.
It was a big day yesterday, an incredible day. And last night, the Republican Party defied history to expand our Senate majority while significantly beating expectations in the House for the midterm and midterm year. We did this in spite of a very dramatic fundraising disadvantage driven by Democrats' wealthy donors and special interests and very hostile media coverage, to put it mildly. The media coverage set a new record and a new standard.
As President Donald Trump speaking at a press conference today, reacting to yesterday's midterm results, if you watched it, you were probably immersed in the returns as they came back. You may have been one of those people who tried to avoid it and find something else to watch. After you've seen all of the results come in and not come in and the question marks, you go to bed and the next morning you wake up and maybe it looks a little clearer, maybe it doesn't. One of the things that I noticed missing last night, there was lots of references to the Supreme Court because the Senate was at least in theory on the line, but there were, as far as I could see, no references to the religious divide that stands behind that issue of the Supreme Court. Greetings and welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Wednesday afternoon, the 7th of November. Joining us to talk about media coverage of the midterm elections, this religious divide in the Supreme Court, Terry Mattingly will be with us in just a moment. After we conclude our conversation with Terry on the midterms and that religious divide, we'll get into listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. Terry Mattingly is a regular guest. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
So why can I watch, as much as I could stand to watch, the coverage, switching back and forth between several channels, of the midterm elections as they were occurring in real time? And to my recollection, hear no reference to religion, religious issues, and how they may have impacted the outcome.
Well, I think, once again, that's because politics is the actual religion of most of the press corps and also of most of the activists who are called in to interpret the mysteries of the sacred rite of midterm elections or other elections or whatever. I watched it last night and decided about 2 hours in that the code language for religion in most of last night's coverage, and I toggled back and forth between CNN and Fox for the most part, I decided that the code language, once again, for religion last night was, unfortunately, U.S. Supreme Court. Because when they talked primarily about Senate seats, they talked over and over about this would allow Republicans to name someone more conservative to the court, because not only did they retain the Senate, they picked up one or two seats. And people even went so far as to say things like, well, this means that if there's an opening on the court, Trump can dare to appoint Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court because now he has the votes that he doesn't have to depend on two moderate GOP senators of a feminist perspective to come through with a vote. So if Supreme Court stands for religion, because Supreme Court stands for what issues? Can you answer that question for me?
Well, the issue I think that probably is most in play in the mind of many is simply abortion. There are others, though.
And I would say right now, the broad field of religious liberty issues, in its own way, is just as controversial. And we really haven't found a way to put that into words. I mean, people have a lot more practice, several decades of encasing abortion in fog to kind of make it more palatable for discussions. But it's really interesting, last night you heard lots and lots and lots of talk about the Senate being important, because that would continue to give Trump freedom with judicial appointments. And then the logical equation would stop right there. As close as it would come to the overt religious content was the occasional reference to Amy Coney Barrett, who, of course, is a devout Roman Catholic and stands for cultural conservatism on the court. Someone who is, you know, openly, enthusiastically Roman Catholic, or in the infamous words of her confirmation hearings to the court she's currently on, the dogma lives loudly in you, which is kind of like Yoda of Star Wars, you know, comes to political commentary. It's an interesting sentence on every level, but you get my point. Now, last night, did you see lots of references to Senate equals judges?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was, if it wasn't explicitly stated, it was implicit in every conversation about the balance of the Senate.
Yeah. On Fox, it was made explicit a tremendous amount, and not just by the talking head commentators, including Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, who got the online one-liner, the meme of the night, with her Orange Man Bad reference. Did you happen to see that live?
I did not. You're going to have to tell us about it.
Okay, Orange Man Bad is the whole idea that the only thing Democrats can really agree on right now is that Trump is evil. And I believe, I'm not as pop culture hip as I used to be, surely nowhere as hip as Molly, but I believe that this is a popular music, even a rap reference, Orange Man Bad. So Molly worked it into one of her answers last night, and within an hour that had been turned into an internet JPEG of Molly going, Orange Man Bad, Orange Man Bad, and then it became like a dance track with Molly wearing sunglasses and all that. You've got to look it up. It's a classic. But anyway, my point being, even the reporters last night kept saying over and over, if you had your choice, Trump, the House can come after you with subpoenas. The Trump's life and his administration, the House can raise all kinds of Hades for Trump. But in the end, he would rather maintain control of the Senate. And he worked very hard down the stretch to help Senate candidates in the states where he felt his presence would help them. And by doing so, everybody just said, that's because right now in the United States, judges are more important than legislation. And that, to me, is a tremendous tragedy, and it is, simply stated, the biggest, in addition to the reality of Roe and the reality of abortion, the biggest political legacy of Roe is how powerful the court is. This brings us back to the old statements, of course, that Justice Anthony Kennedy, as that fifth vote on all those decisions, functioned as a kind of unelected ruler of the United States, our Lord and Sovereign Tony Kennedy, as some people had said. Or in Molly's words, it's his country, he just lets us live here. Well, the court is going to be even more powerful if you divide the House and the Senate, unless the Democrats in the House are smart enough to come up with some packages of legislation, say on infrastructure, highways, mass transit, some of the more blue-collar, populist Democrat stuff that Trump waved like a flag in 2016 and then he hasn't done anything about it. It would be really smart for the Democrats to call his bluff and come up with some of that stuff now. And you could actually see some legislation come out of the House that would have a chance of being signed by Donald Trump. But I don't think right now you want to bet a whole lot of money betting on unity and logic in American politics.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the Supreme Court, a religious divide, and the midterm elections. When we come back, what does it all mean, the slight reshuffling that we witnessed last night? What does it mean moving forward?
With Western man, there's no going back behind Christ. It's either Christ or it's nothing at all. If it's nothing at all, then he ceases to have any culture or any civilization, properly speaking. His civilization comes to an end.
Dr. Anthony Eslin, author of the best-selling book, Out of the Ashes, talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
But for Western man to know Christ and then to turn away from him, to have his whole civilization built upon the Christian faith and then to turn away from that, is suicide.
You can meet and hear Dr. Anthony Eslin making the case for Western civilization at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Attendance is limited to 400. Child care is free. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we are committed to our Lutheran confession and heritage. Please encourage the student in your life to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press. Saving Western civilization, one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of the religious divide, the Supreme Court, and the midterm elections. Terry Mattingly of the On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate is our guest. So, Terry, other than all eyes being turned to watch Justices Ginsburg and Breyer, what does this reshuffling mean going forward?
Well, I mean, the House means it's going to rain subpoenas on the White House, trying to get all kinds of documents, I would say, starting with Trump's tax forms and stuff. So that's pretty obvious. They have a decision between legislate and investigate. Was the way the language everybody was using on all of the channels last night. It's possible for them to do both. And like I said, I think it would be politically smarter for them to try to come at Trump with legislation linked to some of the stuff he claimed he was going to do anyway. If you only investigate Trump, and especially if you leave Nancy Pelosi as the Speaker of the House, and I think there's an outside chance she won't be elected Speaker, in large part because there were quite a few kind of more moderate Democrats running for the House who openly stated they did not intend to support her for a Speaker. So I think that's one of the dramas to watch for in the next couple of days on a purely political sense. If the House behaves in anything like a rational way, then the drama is even more going to turn to whether or not there's an opening on the U.S. Supreme Court. One or two. I mean, you have two justices in their 80s, and in Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you have someone who has already been through two major cancer surgeries. And it's fairly apparent that she's not in very good health right now. But boy, that is a tough liberal woman, and I'm not expecting her to say, sure, I'm going to let Donald Trump pick my replacement. I'll be stunned if she retires. voluntarily. The issue is whether there's a health crisis that somehow complicates her work to the point where she is forced to retire.
Well, I guess that's, I don't want to contemplate such things for anyone, but I can picture a likely scenario where she's incapacitated or partly incapacitated due to her age and illness, God forbid, and it is left to others to decide whether or not she should still be a justice
right.
in the Supreme Court.
Exactly. And my point is, the minute there is any chance that a Supreme Court chair goes open, all of a sudden, everybody has to talk about the religious, moral, and cultural issues that they worked so hard to avoid talking about last night. One other thing that we can talk about, what happened to the white evangelicals? We already have some exit poll data out from the Pew Research Center indicating that the white Protestants continued to go pretty consistently 75% Republican. And they tested House races, not Senate races. And I think the odds are pretty good that more white Protestants, evangelicals, would have voted for Republicans for the Senate, again, because the Senate is linked to judges, and the judges are linked to the court, and the court is linked to the religious issues. The House, you know, since it doesn't play that big of a role in that, I think a lot of people in different parts of the country just vote for their congressman because they trust him or her, and that's not quite as attached to party, you know, in some parts of the country. So the white evangelicals did their thing. Looking at the rest of the religion data that came out from Pew, you know, one of the things that nobody talks about is the Protestant other Christian line, which is historically interpreted as the mainline Protestants. Now, the mainline Protestants are in there, I assume. I think the Missouri Synod Lutherans are in there, too. Whether they belong among the evangelicals or the mainliners, I guess, is a good point of debate. But it seems to me that nobody really wants to talk about that group, which I would presume is pretty liberal, continues to vote Republican, maybe not by as large a percentage as they have in the past, but it matters that that part of the American population still went 56% for the Republicans in the House races. The other thing that everybody, of course, is watching, and Texas, the Texas Senate race was like the cause célèbre for this, the religiously unaffiliated, the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, that portion of the electorate continues to grow. It has risen, you know, in each of the elections. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm always, whenever I see that number, I'm reminded of that great quote coming up now, almost a decade ago, by the man at the University of Akron, John C. Green. It's a quote that I've said here on the show many times, but I really don't think you can stress it too much. Coming up about a decade ago, and I heard him first say this all the way back when Barack Obama was first being hinted at as a candidate for the presidency, John Green made the point. He said that within a couple of years now, which means we would definitely be there now, he said the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S, were going to be the largest identifiable group in the modern coalition of the Democratic Party, larger than the black church, larger than any other identifiable sub-niche, this group of religiously unaffiliated liberal religious believers, atheists, agnostics, that coalition was going to be the largest group of people within the Democratic Party. And he said prophetically, and that means they're going to be to the Democratic Party what the religious right is to the Republican Party, which is the moral, cultural, social group the party leaders cannot afford to ignore. So how easy is it to run cultural moderates of any kind when the largest identifiable subgroup within your party is defined in terms of cultural liberalism? Because Pew found that the nuns, what unites them more than any other thing is their views that traditional religion is wrong on anything that has to do with sexuality. That's what unites the Nuns Coalition more than any other issue. And you could kind of see some of the tension last night in the House races, because the Democrats did a great job of running some more moderate-type candidates, including women with military experience. And a lot of those candidates won last night. I think 6 out of 10 or something like that. They had quite a bit of success running these women for office who had more of a mainstream, even culturally conservative image because of their military background. Fascinating stuff, and I can't stress too much that people have to watch that continuing tension within the Democratic Party as we move closer now, like it or not, to the Iowa caucuses. Doesn't that kind of make you shudder?
It doesn't seem like it's possible, actually, but
450-something days away from the Iowa caucuses or whatever. Like, ugh. Don't want to go there.
Okay. You say this, and I'd like you to explain it, because I think it's the first time I've ever heard you say this. You say that as a rule, most journalists look at flyover country, America, and immediately think race, not religion.
Because race is something that on which they have definitive received political doctrine, and the assumption that Republicans are secretly racist has been with us for a long, long, long time. And to have someone like Trump show up who's willing to do what he did with things like the caravan ads during the last weeks of the election, whatever one thinks of the immigration issues attached with that, Trump is receiving enthusiastic support from people who arguably are alt-right extreme people and legitimately can be called racist. And the fact that Trump doesn't have this knack for putting them down or making it clear that he doesn't believe what they believe, we saw that in the Robert E. Lee cases in Charlottesville and whatever, that issue is going to remain alive, because that's the moral issue on which the press justifiably is absolutely certain, and they want to be able to talk about everything in terms of race alone. I would argue that for a lot of people, it was closer to flyover country reality when Barack Obama famously said that, you know, we have lots of people out in that part of the country who are clinging to, remember the famous phrase, God, guns, and gays. Well, guns, people are actually more divided on that than people would like to admit, but there's no question that he admitted that religion was a huge part of it. And I think when Hillary did her basket of deplorables image, that included not so veiled references to abortion and gay rights and a lot of other issues that for her clientele is automatically assumed, even though Democrats remain at the whole national party level more divided on those issues than they would like to admit. So that's what I meant.
On the subject, I think this fits into the category of something you should ask in exit polling. Should the media be reporting more on worship attendance and how you vote?
You know what? That, to me, would be fascinating, especially if we're trying to understand the divisions inside of evangelicalism. The work that Lifeway and the Billy Graham Center did in their studies of the 81 percentile myth, that's one of the issues that came up. We saw it in World Magazine throughout 2016 when their polls of major evangelical leaders were considerably more either anti-Trump or upset about Trump than the polls that were coming back of, quote, the total evangelical vote. There seems to be some evidence that frequent church-going evangelicals, a lot of them may have voted for Trump, but they were not enthusiastic about it, and they certainly cannot be considered part of his base, or at least they are only part of his base until the American political scene offers them some alternatives other than Hillary Clinton or quite liberal Democrats defined as liberal on moral and social issues.
If we look at the phenomenon that is, it's a media phenomenon as much as it is people going to the polls. It's like Christmas and Thanksgiving and Halloween all rolled together for the media. If we look at that and we see this gap in what influences so many Americans' lives, decisions, and even their votes, their religious views, be they favorable, even hostile to religion, how can the media be excused in any way for not at least giving us the data on this stuff, like the exit polling data, and saying, look, this is a factor, and not having to simply rely on us figuring out that when they say Supreme Court, yeah, they must mean religion.
It's like magic formulas we have to figure out.
Yes.
Well, let me give you an example of the number that I want to know more than any other right now, and this addresses your point. I want exit poll data from Florida that tells me how Latino evangelicals and Pentecostal Christians voted. Because I've lived in Florida, and I know that there are lots of Latino evangelicals of various kinds in Florida, and I know that their politics is not simplistic by any means, but that they tend to be even more socially conservative than inactive Latino Catholics. Well, when you look at how few votes Donald Trump won the state of Florida by 2 years ago, I mean, razor thin margin. You can make a case that Donald Trump is in the White House, ironically, because of Latinos. And then you look at how close the governor race and the Senate race, and that Senate race has Amy Coney Barrett's name written on it in terms of her being a viable candidate for the Supreme Court. When you look at those two elections and how close they were, I want to know if Latino evangelicals are actually the power in American politics right now in Florida, and thus maybe in the equation of Republicans trying to succeed at the national level again. It would be so ironic to me if, after the oceans of ink that has been poured out on white evangelical voters, if we've been missing one of the most crucial variables here, which is what impact have Latino evangelicals had in the close races of Florida.
With only 30 seconds here, I do have to ask you, as one former Texan to another, how do you explain the Cruz race last night, how close it was in Texas? About 30 seconds.
Well, millions and millions and millions of dollars spent on behalf of the man who now has to be considered the unelected U.S. Senator from Hollywood, in Beto O'Rourke. Then you have the fact that Cruz is not the most attractive candidate in the history of the planet, just at the level of his people skills. Basically, what I'm hearing and what looks logical is that's the race where the white evangelicals rescued somebody. That without a massive turnout of white evangelicals, Cruz might have lost Texas last night. To tie that together to another thing as a sign-off, I predict the next major national candidate out of Texas will be a Latino evangelical or a Latino Catholic, and his last name might be Bush.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, talk with you again next week.
Glad to do it.
On the other side of the break, it is listener email. We'll be responding to as much as we can on this Wednesday afternoon, and the Issues Etc. comment line 618-223-8382.
For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. This child, Jesus Christ, is the focus of every Christmas card that Emmanuel Press offers. Whether in stained glass, illumination, or classic works of art, Christmas cards from Emmanuel Press joyfully confess our Savior's birth with the words of Scripture and the poetry of hymns. Visit their website at emmanuelpress.us to create a custom assortment of cards, EMM anuelpress.us.
With religion in America continuing its historic decline over yet another year, many may wonder, how fares the LCMS? This November, the Lutheran Witness is once again shedding light on the state of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Find the latest on global mercy work, missions, membership statistics, schools, and more in this special edition. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the world through a Lutheran Christian perspective.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Solid, serious, substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Several Issues Etc. regular guests are candidates for leadership positions in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Every LCMS congregation has received nomination forms for the president and vice presidents of the synod. Please encourage your pastor and congregational leaders to fill out and return these nomination forms before February 20th of 2019. Learn more at issuesetc.org/nominations. issuesetc.org/nominations.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performance Fitness 618.com.